SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good pre-entry Monday race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. Busy Monday, and I don't mean just what we're going to do for 3 hours. It's a busy Monday for Dora Delgado and Courtney Reed and everybody that will take pre-entries for the Breeders' Cup. And then the committee will have to do some ranking. Interestingly, it feels like there's any number of races that are getting really oversubscribed, and then there's other races that are contracting, notably the turf. We'll get to that as part of this morning's conversations, undoubtedly, but the watch is on, the clock is ticking, do whatever, use whatever, appropriate description you want. We're underway on this pre-entry Monday. And the fields announced, it will be announced on Wednesday, the pre-entry fields, and then the mechanics will all start to fall into place. You'll be able to assess what we're looking at in greater detail, and of course still those final decisions to be made. Some of the horses that'll cross enter, many with heavy intention in one direction or another, pretty well established, like a Mattoli, for instance, sprinting, but will cross enter anyway, that kind of thing. There was certainly a notable decision over the weekend, and any number of notable pieces of news with Catalina Cruiser on Saturday morning. And Jay Pribman with John Sadler, and Sadler making his decision to go in the tougher spot. How about that? Right? Keep your self in the best company, right? And horses in the worst. Is that right? Not that there's a weak sister when you were comparing the dirt mile and the sprint, but Catalina Cruiser in the sprint, caught people, a little bit by surprise. And there were some silly suggestions. Oh, he doesn't want to run against Omaha Beach. No, he'd much prefer to run against Mattoli. and right? And Imperial Hint and Chancelot. Yeah, that absolutely. He's avoiding Omaha Beach to run against those monsters. Yeah, okay. No, that's the beauty of this. It's... it's supposed to be competition at the highest level. With all the things that are frustrating about Breeders' Cup, and that is that it's become a monolith, and has hurt, let's be honest, it's hurt things like the fall racing at Belmont, Santa Anita, et cetera. Some of those, essentially what were championship seasons, turning important grade ones into preps. That's the one shadow of the Breeders' Cup that is a little odious, but it's supposed to be, an assembly of each division's best that are available. The ones that are continuing on, and whether in some cases, these are career finales or approaching career finales. That's the way we're looking at Omaha Beach. Heading toward, probably a Malibu and Pegasus start, etc. But that's what a decision like Catalina Cruiser's is supposed to be. That, whichever direction you go, you're going to be confronted by, you know, by killers. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, that's the whole point of it. You want to be tested, and you want to, you know, be anointed appropriately after you vanquish the fields that are supposed to come together. We're going to, I'd say about 50% easily of today, maybe a little bit more, maybe 2/3 of the morning, we'll begin to really knuckle down to Breeders' Cup conversation, certainly with Johnny. Johnny's going to join us a little early this morning because Nick Luck is going to join us at 10. Nick had the only window as his, you know, fortnight is going to be very tight. And so I got Nick for you at 10 o'clock, and we'll talk British Champions Day and the ramifications of it and who moves forward, who shows up. You want to talk about a trooper, magical. Holy cow. Magical. Nothing. It seems to impede her. Magical is going to come, and looks like a Magical versus Sister Charlie showdown in the Filly and Mare Sprint. I haven't heard any more about Fleeting. We'll see what Nick knows from the Ballydoyle bunch. Some of the younger horses, of course, because, you know, Brian will have a phalanx of juveniles. So we'll get that kind of update from Nick. Plus, he'll tell you about week two of Luck at the Cup, some more of the interviews that he conducted over the last couple of months preparing for Breeders' Cup. And they already, I think, there's three already that dropped last week. And there's another four, I think, coming up during the week, including today. So Nick will fill you in on that. And before I tell you about everything else that's coming, including Mike Welsh and John White in hour three, Nick is also going to spend time, and I'm going to segue from the Breeders' Cup introduction. And, of course, we got Fasig October sale. The last yearling sale starts today, 10 o'clock, in fact. It starts at 10. 4 days of yearling marketplace. So that'll be involved as well this week. Keep an eye on what's going on there. The last roundup for the yearling market. But got to bring up with Nick, as well as my own, and Tina and everybody that was at Far Hills on Saturday, we'll bring up Wicklow Brave, and I want Nick to talk about him and appreciate his career. And it was seemingly we were on our way to a perfect day on Saturday. It was the weather. It was glorious. It was sunny and light breeze, and just it could not have been more beautiful. And the always fun atmosphere that Far Hills produces, and everything building to the feature, to the Grand National, and then even within the running of the Grand National, what was shaping up as a, you know, an epic showdown and stretch run, as the two principles that we talked about extensively with Joe Clancy and with Tom Herman on Friday and Bill Gallo and Guy Torsiglieri, Wicklow Brave and Brain Power, and the two of them had come together. Wicklow Brave had basically stalked the pace setter and took over, and then was confronted in the, you know, the last third of the race by Nico de Boinville and Nicky Henderson's Brain Power. And the two of them looked like they were going to go shoulder to shoulder through the last stages. And the last jump. Wicklow Brave just didn't negotiate it well and catches it hard and falls and breaks his shoulder. And it was obvious. When he got up, it just was obvious that this was going to be a catastrophic incident. And though we made it back to, you know, back to the barns where the horses stage, there was no the shoulders and pelvic injuries are a disaster, the circulation and everything else, that internal bleeding, and there was no saving Wicklow Brave. And it's deflating at any level and with any incident, with any loss of life with a, you know, with a brave runner of any kind. But Wicklow Brave, as we really tried to convey, particularly to those who, you know, may not follow the international, you know, chase scene, you really can't convey. Nickel will do it justice later when we talk. You know how how big of a star he has been. So it cast at least for those that, you know, are carefully following the action. A lot of people are there for the party. There's no two ways about that. But if you're following the action, it just kind of cast a pall over things. And hearts go out to everybody that, and when I say everybody, if you didn't see, you know, the outpouring of emotion and appreciation for Wicklow Brave on the internet, you might want to go back and look. And you know, for Willie Mullins and his son, the son was there to look over and control and, you know, prepare the horses. It had been a landmark day already, because earlier Mullins had captured his first North American victory in the PPAC with Prava Laguna, who was spectacular. I mean, she was unbelievable, giving 10 to 20 pounds to the field, and she trounced them. And, you know, from that point, you felt, you know, this could be a very special day for the Willie Mullins team. And instead it ends the way it did. So you could also tell from Nicky Henderson, who, you know, to win this race, I'm sure owner Michael Buckley and De Boinville as well, they would have preferred to go shoulder to shoulder with Wicklow Brave down the stretch and beat him that way. They were a dozen lengths easily, 15 lengths ahead of the rest of the field. The two of them had just run away from the rest of the field. So it was very hard, I got to tell you. And I told Tina, you know, I said, I you know, normally you stay and there's a very nice cocktail party, you know, afterward. And I told Tina, I said, we're not staying. I was so looking forward to whether he was going to win or not, but not to have to say goodbye that way. So no matter how stoic everybody is, it's very hard. The rest of the day had been, you know, really fun and competitive, and you know, they set handle. I mean, obviously the handle, they'll be setting handle records every year because it's all, you know, it's developing. But they, you know, they were up, I don't know, 40% on track and 50% or maybe a little less than that in the simulcast. But Jack Fisher with a pair of wins. Gordon Elliott won with the Global Freedom, who was very good in the Gladstone. And Ricky Hendricks with the Exacta and the Harris. The wins were being spread around nicely, and that included Snap Decision, who was very strong in the Foxbrook, and Mr. Naylor, who was on hand, or good to see Irv Naylor, and he won with Fearsome, and that was the big surprise, almost 15-1 in the Hunt Cup, which, you know, became the mile and a half flat race, and that was the key. That was the key get in the cross country. You know, the cross country had modest handle, I think $20,000, but they paid $3,000, and that was a funny spot because I used six horses. There were another five, but I didn't see Fearsome at all, and paid $3,140. So overall, it was still a lot of fun. We'll head to the break, and I've got tons to do here. We got to talk about the race cards at Maryland Million and the Empire Showcase Day, as well as Remington Friday night. Keeneland, of course. Three very good stakes and a really nice collection. And one thing that was notable, I thought, pretty much everywhere, was how the wins really got spread around. You know, sometimes, particularly with the state bred days, you might have, you know, kind of a dominant, you know, you'll have certain outfits, you know, kind of dominate, but that's not, that wasn't the case. There was a little something for everybody. And the Keeneland Stakes, after Maker won the Sycamore Thursday, Baltus comes back, Lady Prancelot, and Joe Bravo, who's having a very nice, you know, Joe Bravo, the Chris Carter of Keeneland Riders. All he does is win stakes. Lady Prancelot in the Valley View. We gotta reach for Neil Pessin. And how about Bell's the One in the Raven Run on Saturday? How great was that? Corey Lannery aboard. Bell's the One. And it's funny, because where were we? Was that at, where was I? Was that at Oaklawn? Was it Oaklawn, I think? I got to look at her PPs. I watched. It wasn't Fairground. I can't remember. Who remembers? I watched Bell's the One with Neil somewhere during the spring. And she did not run well, but she ran well on Friday, winning the Raven Warren. And then yesterday, father-in-law, son-in-law, and of course that's eligible to be any number of trainer jockey combos. Ian Wilkes and Chris Landeros, Gentle Ruler yesterday in the Dowager. Yeah, we got the Woodbine action. Little bit of California stuff. More good karma for Doug O'Neill, who ran 1-2 yesterday in the Sunny Slope with four left. Glatt, another winner. That was in the California Flag on Saturday. We'll get to this. What else? The Oklahoma Classics, we'll get to. Eight different outfits won races on the Oklahoma Classics card. It's pretty cool. A couple of jocks did particularly well. Cabrera won 3, Aramia won 2. So, a lot of that. Johnny D, Nick Luck, Mike Welch with all of the Churchill Work action, and there was a lot of it. And I guess at some point, I got to thank Gary and Paul and Benji Hernandez with an unbelievable ride on Minute Mouse. I wished her luck on Friday as we were closing out. And all she did was later that afternoon, 27-1, popped. It was sweet. Pretty exciting. Back after this, at the races.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Play the Empire 6 at Belmont Park featuring daily payouts and a carryover jackpot. Best of all, it only takes 20 cents to take down the Empire. One unique winning ticket earns the entire net pool plus the jackpot carryover. Without a unique ticket, 75% is distributed to winners with 25% added to the jackpot. The Empire 6 consists of the final six races each race day at Belmont Park, and the next jackpot carryover mandatory payout is Sunday, October 27th. Learn more at nyra.com/Empire6. The Empire 6, play small and win big.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9000. 938-4643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Feeling like a boss, staring at the stars. It doesn't matter the cost.
We're back at the races. Just about 25 into hour one. I will save all the Champions Day stuff for Nick. The champion and the sprint, Queen Elizabeth, the filly and mare, and what it's going to mean for everybody. And got all this for as well for Mike Welch. Yeah, you don't need to. Don't need to do that. All right. Well, and I should mention, by the way, as we get going, that Casey on the board today, and it right in time. And I know a number of people have mentioned and they've noticed very clearly that the archive and the replay, you know, the replays are running again on the stream after the show, and you're seeing the archive up quickly because Casey is more than easing his way back in. He's been tremendous the last now it's a good 2.5-3 weeks, and unless he's got anything that in the mornings that keeps him away from the board, he's back. He's back today and to start the week, a couple of days at least, and probably Deja midweek. But it's a lot of fun to see the first text of the day, the first message I get from, you know, usually every morning is from the studio. And so when Casey's popped up this morning, that was great. Johnny D's going to join us. Might as well get Johnny now, and I don't have to worry about Johnny, you know, filling in an extra few minutes, and we'll get our other conversations in with some of the trainers in the second half of the show. Somebody that I guess I can talk about as we wait for Johnny. Yesterday in that Athena that I discussed with Dave Grenig on Friday, Zenobia for Jonathan Thomas. And boy, it comes at a great time. How perfect for Thomas's barn to have, you know, Zenobia to fill in literally within, 72 hours of Catholic Boy having to retire. And after several fits and starts to try to get Catholic Boy rolling toward a season-ending goal, the decision made just to abandon it, and Catholic Boy will head to Claiborne to stand stud. But you know, you have a horse like that leave your barn, you're depressed for, in this case, about, I don't know, 18 hours. Because here's Zenobia for George Strawbridge, the Irish bred that steps right up, a 5-year-old mare by Falco, and wins yesterday the Athena. So probably catch up with Jonathan as well. Here's another Johnny to catch up with. Johnny D, good morning, Johnny. I hear you lurking there. No. All right. What? All right, Case. Pick him up. What's going on? No. Yeah. All right. He's gonna pick him up. See what you know. And while it's funny, while you do that, you remember last week when with Steve Haskin that conversation about Turkoman, and you know, Andy Serling had, in the wake of the Omaha Beach decision, you know, 6 furlongs, and what do you do next after the sprint championship, and the exposure that Turkoman had been a horse. There's probably another, but it hasn't been unearthed yet. But we talked about Turkoman winning the Widener, and Tom Durkin picked up on it and wrote something just this morning on Facebook that made me smile, because Tom was at Hialeah. He was calling the races, and he called those races. So pretty funny, and should really maybe between now and Breeders' Cup we'll get a visit with Durkin. We'll try again with Johnny.
I'm here this time.
All right. I don't know what you would. Did you go off for a donut? Where were you?
No, it wasn't me. It was this electronic world we lived in. The grandkids
All right.
were at work.
Well, it's good to have you, and you know, as I try to introduce,
it's good to be had.
Exactly, good to be seen. The Breeders' Cup portion of our life is upon us here. Pre-entry day, Johnny.
Yeah, I love this time of year because, we talked last week. We talked about prepping. You know, what you do to kind of get ready for it. You breeze through the first set of PPs that you have because, there are so many questions to be answered. You don't want to get too bogged down, but you want to just breeze through each race and get a feeling for it. And then as you go back and you start to look at your notes, your early notes, you start to cross some horses off the list in each race, which your show has been great for the breaking news and delivering news, condensing it from other outlets, whether it's Racing Form correspondence or wherever the news comes from. But we hear from trainers, we hear from reporters, and that's all a big help because it cuts down when you kind of have an idea where these horses might run or the ones that aren't running at all. It saves you time. It saves you effort. But we still have questions. And some significant questions, too, I think, in certain cases. It was nice to get the Omaha Beach question answered. And John Sadler gave us a little bit of a surprising answer about where he's going to run his horse, not in a mile, but in the sprint instead. And, today, pre-entries, but we won't really get to dig into them until probably Wednesday. But I think we've learned some things over the weekend. I've learned they're talking about bringing Magical back again, which I'd forgotten that she'd done this last year.
Yeah.
I it slipped my mind. I mean, I remember she ran a great race, to Enable, but I didn't remember what was leading up to it exactly. And then when I saw this year, I saw that she went ARC Champions Day, and that they said, well, maybe we'll go to the Breeders' Cup. I said, no, they're not going to go. Nobody's going to run again. And if you look at her past performances, she's a throwback, and she runs every month and sometimes twice a month. She's just, she's just made of hickory, as they used to say. And she really ran well last year. So if she comes, she certainly has to be dealt with. And, you just go race by race, and you kind of look at runners that you find interesting. And while we're on the topic of, I guess Chad's been around Bricks and Mortar in the turf, it sounds like, from what I've been reading. And it's mostly guess who's coming to dinner for this one. Because then you're going to have to do some separating. The other ones are, I feel like they're reasonably clear. The Europeans are, I think, the biggest question right now.
The race that has, I don't want to say fallen apart, but I hinted at what has been a bit of a shrunken head with this turf, because Bricks and Mortar, Anthony Van Dyke, okay. Then, some of the ones we knew were running all along, like the, Channel Maker and Arclo and Acclimate, Old Persian, I think, is as far as we know, with Charlie Appleby. But Tom Albertrani over the weekend said no for Sadler's Joy. And the other couple of Europeans that had been mildly suggested, potentially Baltgeist and Japan, they disappeared. So you're down to like eight for the Breeders' Cup turf. I mean, right now, United and who else? United, Channel Cat, a possible from Pletcher. I mean, a little shocking that you'd be that narrow. I don't know if there's anybody else that's going to dive in here late.
The Champions Day really, for this particular race, I think, threw a wrench into the Breeders' Cup. Just like you were mentioning earlier, how the Breeders' Cup, and not intentionally, but this is just how it goes. The Breeders' Cup kind of dinged up, earlier races in the calendar, particularly all around the country. And the tracks had to shuffle their schedules to accommodate Breeders' Cup. I think when Europe threw in the Champions Day, which, I'm bad about these things, but I'm going to say ten years ago, how long has Champions Day been running?
Yeah, that's got to be. It's longer. I would say it's on the longer side than the shorter side. You think to yourself, oh, it's new, but it's 8 to 10 years. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So when they threw that in, it kind of dinged the Breeders' Cup a little bit. But, at the same time, the other issue that pops into mind when we talk about this, about who's coming, who's not coming, who's, in most cases, not all cases, again, the word all should never be used in thoroughbred racing, because there's nothing that sits in the all category as far as handicap is concerned. You can't make it always happens. It never happens. Forget those words. They don't work. But I like to pay attention to trainers and outfits who are planning on doing a certain thing, and they've circled it on the calendar, and they're coming at it, and they've prepared for it, and that was their goal all along. When you get this shuffling, we're not going to go, we're going to go, that kind of thing, I don't think that bodes well for that horse's chances. It's just a little handicapping factor that I like to mix into the rest of the salad. But, like a case of, since we're talking about the turn, Charlie Appleby with Old Persian. Here's a runner who, came over for the Northern Dance and won that convincingly at Woodbine. And Appleby said this is the Breeders' Cup had always been in the plans. We've been planning on it. He's a pretty well-traveled horse. He's a nice four-year-old. Depending on Magical, certainly, is a cut above everybody if she comes, except maybe, we don't know how good Bricks and Mortar on that stage is going to perform. But this is the kind, Old Persian, where we're aiming at that race. I like that. I like to see that. And then the other divisions also. I like guys who are aiming for the Breeders' Cup and have planned to be there all along. You'll have cases here and there where other guys will say, well, we're not going to go. And then a week later, yeah, we're going to go to Breeders' Cup. I don't like that. I don't like when that happens. Because this game's tough enough when you know where you're going.
No, fair point. And I would have to beat the bushes to recall, somebody that made a, very late decision. It's one thing to, to tack in one direction, or another to a certain race, when you're looking at more than one. It's a different story to, to say, at the 11th hour, we're coming. I mean, there are horses, and this is interesting because I brought up the horse, and I sent out the tweet on Friday after discussing the juvenile turf sprint with Marty McGee, and the horse of Cal Lynch that is really emergent and is going to look like a horse that came out of left field, called Miss J. McKay, and the name for Jim McKay, although a filly, and is being supplemented to the juvenile turf sprint. And it's going to look like, oh, this horse just decided. Well, not exactly. They've known since the prep win that this horse was coming. They just weren't vocal about it. So there always are some horses, the names that are going to show up in these pre-entries, and you're going to say, who is this? Where did this horse come from? Don't be dismissive. I brought this up with Gus on Friday. Don't be dismissive of anybody until you've, and particularly go watch Herb wins, and you'll raise your eyebrows. She's a serious player.
Yeah, and also think, you know, if you hear someone, like for example, I'll just give you a high profile example. Shug said on our code of honor, we're not
work this morning.
Yeah, but then he said, then they changed their mind and said they're going to go. Okay, so the horse is doing fine, and they're going to go, and that's. And certainly has a chance. I can't say he doesn't have a chance. He looks sensational winning, and, you know, if Shug says let's go, he's doing fine and everything's good. But, you know, it's just enough for me to say, why was it no? Now, we're not always going to know that answer, and it could be a variety of things that have nothing to do with the horse. It's other things. But I don't like the hesitation. Let's put it that way. So I probably just knocked him into the winner's circle.
Yeah, exactly. Johnny, one story that I hadn't included so far, a lot to do and a lot of things to discuss off the weekend. The decision after we got off the air at noon on Friday, that must have been about 3 o'clock. I think I saw the press release come and Breeders' Cup honoring the Stronach Group and Santa Anita's house rule regarding Jerry Hollendorfer, and they're not going to let him enter. I think when it comes to Danuska's My Girl, it's who he's not involved in from an ownership standpoint. Dan Ward will undoubtedly, get to saddle her, but a little bit more involved for Vasilika, where Hollendorfer's has an ownership stake. This is certainly my opinion's been made very clear on this. To me, the unfairness of the whole policy and the scapegoating of Hollendorfer. But some thoughts on this. I wanted to get the news out because I hadn't mentioned it in the first half hour.
Well, it really doesn't.
It's not a surprise.
It's not a surprise, and trainers have ways of coping with it, and Hollendorfer will cope with it, and Dan Wardle is a suitable substitute, and, you know, he's got to, you know, unburden his share in Vasilika or Vasilika, however you want to say it, and that can be done. This is the way it is. These are rules, and we got to play by them.
Well, Vasilika, obviously, it would not want her excluded from, you know, her opportunity to run in this. We'll see what.
She's a tiger at Santa Anita, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's.
But she's also bucking that. Isn't she bucking the trend there? California-based fillies in that race?
That's true.
Yeah, she's bucking that big trend, which I think is, off the top of my head, over 44, maybe?
Yeah, it's some crazy number.
It's an insane number.
And yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't to me. I don't know. And whether she has a chance or not on paper, whether you like her or you don't like her or whatever, just that number over the years. And I was talking to someone about, you know, that covers California prepped fillies and mares, 0-44 with 5 in the money finishes. And I thought to myself, well, you're covering Bobby Frankel, Charlie Whittingham, and
Neil Drysdale.
Ron McAnally, Neil Drysdale. I mean, you go through a list of Hall of Fame trainers that covers. And then someone mentioned to me that this was not an original Breeders' Cup race. It didn't come until, I can't remember.
The seventh season, after 7 cups, I think.
Yeah. Charlie Whittingham is probably not included in there. And Frankel, at the time, what he had done is he had those Eastern-based barns. So he would send some of his stock back east and raced them there. And, you know, there were some examples of Intercontinental, who, you know, was raced in California some, but was one of those Frankel Belmont Eastern-based horses.
Sure.
So there's a little asterisk there, but still, there's still an all. That is an amazing statistic. And she fits it, so.
Well, when it comes to, that's a good segue, when it comes to the statistics and those kinds of tidbits and form elements, we break them out every year, so maybe find a couple of new ones. But on Friday, it's setting in. Yeah, John, by my saying this out loud, I realize that by Wednesday I have to write up my entry for the Express Bet Breeders' Cup wagering guide.
You have an easy race. Classic. It's easy. It's an open and shut case. You know what, though? You can have some fun with that race, really, because you could go, you know, every time I look at it, I think, well, I'm going to get a better idea. Every time I look at it, I just shake my head. Like, what the hell is going to happen in this race? It could go so many different ways. It's really an interesting race.
Well, we've had some clever ideas, over the last few years, including Toast in New York, and
we've had some European clever ideas.
Yeah, I took my, and it's funny because historically I've always scoffed at them, but when it came to those two, you know, recent opportunities, I embraced them both and got real efforts out of both of them. Listen, Toast in New York with a, you know, without incident, who knows? Very well, you know, could have won that race. Doesn't matter. It used them successfully to key. You don't. That's the beauty of Breeders' Cup in general. Again, discussed this a little bit with Gus on Friday in terms of strategy. You don't have to pick a winner in all 14 races. You just have to pick horses that you bet properly and horses that you can envision running well under the circumstances and either keying off them or be sure to include them if you know that they're up against, you know, the Sister Charlie and Magicals of the world. I mean, you know, those two are going to end up, you know, looking completely obvious in the filly and mare turf. Anthony Van Dyke and Bricks and Mortar in the turf.
Will Magical run in the filly and mare turf, or will she run in the turf?
Filly and mare, because they've already got Anthony Van Dyke for the turf.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, those two. I mean, but when you come to the Classic, you better have your spread button ready. I think, unless you like something. It's funny, in the Classic, like, I don't like anybody, but I've got negative vibes about a few of them.
Interesting.
So for example, well, I just told you the little, Code of Honor.
The Code of Honor issue. Yep.
But then also didn't your man Steve Haskin drop a three-year-old Eastern-based,
yes,
California racing, California Breeders' Cup, Eastern-based three-year-old, 0-for-22 number?
He did.
Didn't he drop that on you? Yeah. I thought that was interesting. I'm going to pull up the Classic here as long as we're talking about it, because and the ones that I have positive feelings about, I kind of feel like, I know the mile and a quarter, and she's a complete pro, and she's always there, and it's just that, the win, to say she's dominant at a mile and a quarter, her two wins were in the Delaware Handicap, at two of her three mile and a quarter wins. Well, no offense to the Delaware Handicap, but these are tough. So I'm not that sure that she's that, you know. So I, in other words, my feelings are not the kind where you say this one can't win. They're just negative. They're bumps. McKenzie, man, he's a consistent. He's fast. He's trained by Baffert. The races at Santa Anita. A lot of trains favor Baffert at Santa Anita in the Classic. But I wasn't crazy about the last workout I saw. And I wasn't and I'm not crazy about the way he finished the other day against Mongolian Groove with his tail swishing. And the jock change, I mean, that doesn't really, Rosario certainly is certainly capable of winning the race, but I don't know. It's just things that are not, that's exactly what I mean. There's just the feelings. Seeking the Soul, he hasn't run well in a while. Yoshida is the kind that just is always around, always there, always kind of but not the kind you can wrap your arms around. Mongolian Groom, he's bucking a gelding trend of no gelding has ever won the Classic. Probably haven't been that many have tried, but no gelding has ever won the Classic. That's a knock. And he ran out of his mind the other day, maybe too well. And he's only 2-for-7 at Santa Anita. It's not like it's incredibly his favorite track. Owendale and Tax. I don't know. Nobody was raving about this three-roll prop, which goes back to Code of Honor. Who's screaming from the top of the mountains about the outstanding this three-year-old crop is? I didn't hear anybody. So if you like a three-year-old in here, you can toss Math Wizard in there also, War of Will. In other words, I can't draw a line through them, but I just have negative vibes about them. So who's it leave me with? Higher Power is interesting. He hasn't done as much as the others, but I could throw out his last race. I could give him an excuse. Race before that at Pacific Classic was awesome. He's kind of developing, coming around. The previous two were on turf. Maybe he's just developing new horse, you know, the now horse. And then I keep coming back to Vino Rosso I think he's going to have a good spot early in the race. I don't see a lot of speed in here. He seems to be good right now. He hasn't been a champion, but he's not bad. And he seems to have gotten better at four. So that's where I'm at with the Classic. It's going to be a spread for me. I don't have any real strong feelings.
No, it makes it hard.
And does all that make sense?
It does. Because it's been that kind of a year, in fact, for, I mean, the three-year-olds are three-year-olds, and they have their own agendas. But among the handicap division, we've said all year that the handicap division was, you know, kind of bereft of heavyweights, and you know, nobody is going to be trying to elevate. I mean, I've had success with Higher Power, and you know, for instance, in the Pack Classic, and I thought highly enough of Mongolian Groom when he came to the Woodward, but you're not going to confuse them with, you know, Accelerate and Gun Runner and you know, that type of horse towers over this group. Now, the horse that's got the chance in particular here, yeah, McKenzie's done a lot of things already to his credit. Vino Rosso, and Steve Haskin wrote about this last week and fleshed it out on Thursday, but Vino Rosso returning after that Gold Cup win at Santa Anita, he's the horse that has got kind of the storyline attached to him, you know, where a lot of the chapters are written already, and he can put a real nice, you know, final chapter, not that it's necessarily final, but that he could put a pretty nice gilding on his career. I think I will not be surprised on Wednesday afternoon, because a lot of times when I go write these things up, Johnny, I sort of let it write itself and make my decision as I write, based on how, you know, how glowingly I talk about the horses. I won't be surprised Wednesday if I end up focusing on Vino Rosso.
Well, all you have to do is replay our conversation, and I gave you the complete race rundown. So you just write that.
So ridiculous, unbelievable.
You know what? You teed it up for me, and then I never took the big swing. But we were going to talk about the wager guide, which, let me give everyone the story on this thing.
Yeah.
It's the free ExpressBet Breeders' Cup Wager Guide, and don't let that free confuse you. It's still very much worth having. So go to ExpressBet.com, get your free wager guide. It'll be available this Friday, and it's online. You can download it. You can print it if you want to, or you can just look at it online. We've got 16 analysts. Just to name a few: Jeff Siegel, Millie Ball, Eddie Olczyk, Nick Luck, Brent Musburger, Steve Bick, Dick Girardi, Bob Niemeyer. I could go on and on. We've got 16 analysts handle each race and a couple double ups. They'll give you analysis. They'll give you suggested wagering strategies. Stats and trends come from Jeremy Plonk. Know this, handicapping angles. We'll tell you some great tidbits, like you heard us mention a couple of them on this show about the California-based Phillies and Mares and the Philly and Mare turf, and a handy exotic wagering chart. It's just a great way to get everything organized. Friday and Saturday races are in there. You've got a selection grid so you can see who all the experts like. It's just a great way to get to jumpstart your Breeders' Cup handicapping if you haven't started already. And that's at ExpressBet.com. And if you don't have an ExpressBet account, get one today. We're open. We're always open. We're online. And when you sign up, use the promo code BYK, that's BYK125. Bet $500 in 30 days, and you'll get $125 put into your account. Betting 530 days, for some of you, it wouldn't take that long. So go ahead and get that extra 125 by the time the Breeders' Cup rolls around, which is coming up on us in about, is it 2 weeks? Is it possible? I guess so.
A week from Friday.
So that's the Express by Wager Guy. The other thing I wanted to make sure I mentioned, we often discuss the Eagles because we're both fans of the team. Some people like our discussions. Some people don't like our discussions. We can keep it very brief this week because the Eagles' performance was bird shit. We'll just leave it at that, and we'll continue on from there. But we are fans. So yes. Even when they lose, we're still going to show our support. I don't want anyone to say, well, they lost, and so you didn't talk about them. We talked about them. Bird shit is what we're saying, and that's it. Move on. I want to advise everyone to keep listening to the Steve Bick, to At the Races with Steve Bick, because the guests you have on, like the one coming on next, Nick Luck, I don't want to hold him up, but he's going to give you insights into the Breeders' Cup and the DRF people, Privman, Grenig, Marty McGee,
Welch.
Mary Rampolini,
Welch. Today?
Everyone. It's great information. The trainers you have on are fabulous. It'd be nice. You know, once you get to Santa Anita, I'm sure you'll have more trainers on. It's fabulous. So listen, pay attention, and don't make any picks now. Wait, just wait. Let everything digest. Oh, and also, you and Gus Alonso talked about taking time to plan your wagers. The handicapping takes a lot of time. 14 races, you get involved. But save time for building wagers. And I mean, seriously, dedicate yourself. Find out who do I really like. Am I going to single Sister Charlie and build everything around her? Am I going to, where is my, who do I like the most? Do I like Eight Rings? Who do I like best? Pick out, you know, who do you like in these races? Lay it out, and then look at the wagering menu. Plan your day. Plan your budget. Budget for your wagers. It's the best way to do it. I don't know how else to do it. You know, if you, the worst thing that can happen is you're losing the entire 2 days. You come to the Classic, and you love Mongolian Groom, and he's hanging up there at 25-1, but you don't have any money left.
That's true.
He romps home by four lengths.
That's true.
Just plan it out, budget for it. Look, if you hit early in the day, you want to come back and press up later, that's fine. That's up to you. But at least if you budget for it, if you get killed through 13 of the 14 races, you'll still have that last one to get your car fare home.
I completely agree. I think back to Fort Larned's win and literally walking from the paddock through the tunnel. I said to Tina, I said, let's jump out here. I said, I want to make a bet. I want to make another bet. And I just loved the way Fort Larned looked so good. And I built a tri ticket and pulled the fat out of the fire. It had a good Friday, and it was getting clobbered on Saturday, and then hit the triple. And Tina and I cashed afterward and headed over to the Dalray. That was it.
And that's the great thing, one of the great things about racing as a wagering game. It only takes one.
You only
need to be right one time. How many days? We know veteran handicappers, veteran horse players know. It only takes one.
We'll have plenty to be prepared for when we talk next Monday. And when are you? You're coming, yes?
Yes. I'll be there sometime Wednesday.
Okay, very good. All right. So maybe we'll...
alert the media.
You are the media.
No, you are the media.
Johnny D, everybody. XB Johnny D. And as I also... I think on the drive down on Saturday to Far Hills, I sent a link with XB TV and the terrific resource. They've created a Breeders' Cup section, each race, each of the 14 races. You can click on each saddle cloth, the 1 through 14, and all of the horses. And this will be finalized, obviously, with pre-entries, but all of the workouts are right there. And not just the workouts. You've also got the tremendous insights of Jeff Siegel and Millie Ball and Zoe and everybody else. Nick Luck is calling for us, so we're going to get to Nick. And Johnny, I will talk to you next week, and looking forward to seeing you out there.
Stevie, I can hardly sleep.
Johnny D, everybody. Let's step away real quick. Nick Luck joins us when we come back. British Champions Day, Wicklow Brave, and more.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Don't wait. With 14 challenging Breeders' Cup races, 5 Friday, November 1st and 9 Saturday, November 2nd, you've got to be ready. Kickstart your handicapping mojo with ExpressBet's free Breeders' Cup wager guide, available online at expressbet.com beginning Friday, October 25th. Get analysis, selections, price plays, and $100 wagering strategies for every Breeders' Cup race from expert handicappers and broadcasters. Plus, oodles of informative stats and trends you won't find anywhere else. XBTV's Jeff Siegel, At the Races radio host Steve Bick, NBC Sports analyst Nick Luck, and multiple Eclipse Award winner Dick Girardi anchor a powerful team of guide experts. NBC Sports analyst Eddie Olchek and retired sportscaster Brent Musburger of VSiN will contribute to a revised guide version available beginning Thursday, October 3rd. 31st. Go to ExpressBet.com now. Open an account, get the free guide, and play Breeders' Cup.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit DRF.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the sum on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit the mall at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Under the island, middle of the mountain, there is a big bad booming system. Blowing speakers, woofers and tweeters, amplifiers, melted wires. The party's exploded, chorus corroded, underground, the Puget Sound. Causing a shifting and a drifting, big black boombox stuck in the hot rock. It's in there flowing, it's in there rolling.
We're back at the races, coming up on almost 10 minutes into hour two. A pleasure always to have Nick Luck join us, and a lot to discuss with Nick, both upbeat and remarkable, magical, for instance, as well as really sad and heartbreaking. Wicklow Brave. Nick, good morning. Well, try that again. Nick. Case, give us, maybe pick them up there, try it again. Hang in there, folks. We'll get Nick momentarily. There's a very nice piece at thoroughbredracing.com, and they've got a set of charts of Wicklow Brave at, you know, some of the biggest, you know, gatherings, his remarkable career on the flat and then over the fences later on. There we go. Now it sounds like we got Nick.
Hi, Steve.
There you go. Not only do we have you, you sound nice and clear. Nick, good morning. it sounded clear for a minute. Nick, did you pick him up, Case? Yeah. This is the international. There we go.
It's all good, my end.
All right, good. All right, we were getting interference.